Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 610 at show number 1002.
Hell no place to go. Darling, hell no place to go.
Phone number is 312-981-7200. That's a text, you call. I got that Twitter situation. At Cochran Show. Facebook at Steve Cochran Show. And welcome to the program. Later on, we're going to give away Hawks tickets for the opener tomorrow night. About that,
can't believe it's here. Well, yes, I can. They've already played 6 preseason games.
Yeah, I mean, you're the sports director. You should believe.
I guess I do know it's here.
And later on, an old friend from the Blackhawks. Special announcement coming up there.
The announcement, by the way, has already been made.
Yeah, but we're not going to announce it till later because we're going to pretend the whole thing's a surprise.
Oh, really?
You can put it in sports.
It's well, I just did.
It's like breaking sports news.
You can put it in sports, but I'm going to pretend I'm surprised by the whole thing.
Okay.
That's the right thing to
cool.
do. Because it's a cool thing. It's a really cool
thing.
It is. Thing.
It's a very cool thing.
No, you know, this is why we can't have nice things. There are no secrets anymore. I wake up last night, I had a conversation about this yesterday, and it's just understood that, you know, the right thing to do is to make this a surprise. And I'm not going to go out and tell a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
By midnight. So popping up on the internet, 14 different places. This is why we can't have nice things.
God, it's like going and looking in your parents' closet for your Christmas presents and finding
and
them.
And finding horrible things mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah. Not that we ever did that.
And Dave, your old friend Ned Colletti is going to be on the show today.
Yep. Former general manager of the Dodgers, a baseball lifer.
A lot of Chicago connections, right?
Yeah, a lot. He's a Chicago guy, so we'll get his thoughts on what's coming up here for not only for the Cubs, but the baseball postseason.
Gerrymandering is not a minor leaguer with the Cubs. Gerrymandering is something that is a little boring on the surface, but extremely important. Karen Conti in the legal segment this morning will try to explain what this big Supreme Court case is to the rest of us. The president did what the president does yesterday in San Juan. We'll talk about that coming up and hopefully how he won't make it worse in Vegas when he goes there today. At 6:13, let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one. Authorities in Las Vegas said Tuesday the gunman who killed 58 people, including himself, he was the 59th. At a country music festival, extensively planned the massacre for months. And then when he checked into the hotel last week, ran tests, including where he would place a camera on a cart in the hallway so he could see cops approaching the room. And the cops approached the door. He shot through the door, wounded a security guard from the hotel, and also killed himself at that point. It was just prior to the door being breached and the police entering the hotel. An amazing amount of planning went in. Marilu Danley, his girlfriend, has arrived back in the States. She arrived at LAX this morning, and we don't know where she's going from here.
Right.
The FBI gave her an Uber.
Apparently, CNN reporting this morning that he had sent her away, said encouraged her to leave, go see your family, and stay there until she heard from him.
And it appears, this is all speculation, but it appears the $100,000 he wired to her family mm-hmm. was the plan to take care of them in some form,
right.
as much as that would do after he was gone. Much more to figure out about this guy. Why did he do it? Was it just money? Why was he so angry? Why was he such a psychopath? And were there signals along the way? Could anything have been done? All of that, all coming up throughout the day and as we continue to cover this story. Next. We need more water. We need more food. That's how the one Puerto Rican mayor summed up the challenges in distributing aid 2 weeks after Hurricane Maria. President Trump visited the U.S. territory yesterday. He told officials they should, quote, be proud that the death toll currently at 34 was far lower than that of a real catastrophe, Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
Did you see that news conference when he turned to the mayor and said,
yeah. Watched every agonizing 17 minutes.
It was brutal. I couldn't believe that was actually happening. Well, how many dead? Well, at that point, it was 16, 17.
High five.
See, that's good. That's good. Yeah. That's not like real disaster like Katrina.
Yeah. He doesn't have empathy, basic human empathy.
When you have the...
when you walk into something like that, like let's say you walk by a funeral home, and you for whatever reason you walk into the funeral home. This is not a real world situation, but I'm just saying, if you walk in and you see a bunch of strangers crying, a bunch of strangers who are grieving for somebody, don't you have some measure of human feeling,
Steve? To take paper towels and toss them like they're footballs to people in the crowd who have lost everything.
Yeah, complete insensitivity.
I don't have any words.
You know, when I drive by a funeral procession, I feel sympathy.
Right.
I don't even know what's going on. I feel sad.
It's exactly right. Don't you feel like you should even pull to the side of the road?
Absolutely.
Take a moment?
I've seen people cut, in, you know, when they have the funeral procession and the stickers and the headlights on, they cut in line, and I think how rude. This doesn't even compare.
Yeah, and turning the paper towel giveaway into a game.
Oh, my God.
Well, we'll talk more about this. Next. Gerrymandering is not a minor leaguer for the Chicago Cubs.
Actually, he was one of the third basemen after Santo.
This confuses everything.
But I think you're talking about a different gerrymandering.
Yes. Gerrymandering at the Supreme Court yesterday. There was consensus that voting maps drawn to give one party an advantage over another is more than just an unattractive feature of American democracy, that it may need to be outlawed. This would be a huge deal in making elections fair. And once again, who steps up?
John McCain.
The guy with cancer who's dying.
Yep.
John McCain, who steps up and says, this has to come to an end. And by the way, I don't want to backtrack here, but John McCain's best friend from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, and one other senator, I forget which one in particular, but they both spoke up about these bump stocks that allow you to turn a regular rifle into an automatic weapon. They said, we need to look at these. And there are several people who saw their comments and said it appears they didn't know that they were legal and didn't know what they could do. For $40, you could take these guns and turn them into, in quotes, machine guns.
Did you see, was it Mitch McConnell who made the comment yesterday, it's too soon to
Mitch
start
McConnell.
Talking? It was McConnell, right? Too soon.
McConnell. But I don't expect any human decency for Mitch McConnell either. So.
Too soon. Okay.
Next. Well, his campaign team repeatedly has said the governor will seek a second term next year, and nominating positions are being circulated. Rauner has yet to formally kick off his reelection bid through a video or a rally that's creating increasing rumors that maybe he's not going to run.
Maybe.
So we'll see if any Republicans pop up and go, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me.
I think he'll run, though, don't you?
I do. Next. A 30-acre site that includes the Chicago Tribune printing plant could become Chicago's next Riverside development and another option in the city's bid to land Amazon's planned second headquarters. It's funny. I have no knowledge of anything related to this story other than, you know, I'll drive by the Trib printing plant, you know, once a month, twice a month.
Yeah.
It's the perfect place for Amazon.
Absolutely. It's right on the river. It's Chicago and Halsted. It used to be called the Freedom Center.
Right.
Where they print, they had the massive printing presses, obviously.
And plenty of free parking.
Yes.
Which you don't get in the city.
And there are now three, this makes three potential locations for Amazon.
What are the other two?
The other two would be the Finkel Steel site on the north side, up around
Goose Island.
Goose Island.
Yeah.
The other would be the old post office. Both of them are gearing up for marketing campaigns aimed at Amazon.
I don't like the old post office. The old post office downtown, it's a little bit of a cluster. It would increase traffic.
Yeah.
They're
and
working
gotta,
on it hard, though, right
but
now.
But I got to get places. I can't have Amazon getting in the way.
I think you're right. This location would be great for Amazon.
Because it's downtown, but it's not downtown.
Correct.
Yeah. Give me Bezos on the phone in a couple of minutes. Let me explain why this works.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, President Barack Obama surprised his wife with a special video message for their 25th wedding anniversary. As she talked with Shonda Rhimes at the Pennsylvania Conference for Women in Philadelphia. You know, those two kids seem to still like each other, which was nice.
Yeah, it is
nice. There you go. American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man. Remember, the whole point of the Top 6 at 6 is to make you look like a genius when you get to work. You wouldn't believe what you know. Don't give me any credit for it. Just take all that knowledge that we've given to you and run with it. At 6:20, let's see the traffic with Mary, and then we'll come back in just a moment and continue the festivities of show number 1002.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Mick Mulvaney is here, right there, and Mick is in charge of a thing called budget. Now, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack because we've spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. If you look at a real catastrophe like Katrina, and you look at the tremendous hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that died, and you look at what happened here with really a storm that was just totally overpowering. Nobody's ever seen anything like this. And what is your death count as of this moment? 17?
16 certified.
16 people certified. 16 people versus in the thousands. You can be very proud.
There's something really, I'm not being flip at all here. There's something really wrong with him. I mean, there's no explanation for that. That's not a slip of the tongue. That's not, I could have stated that better. To stand up there and go, what, 16, 17 dead? Hey, who's got the numbers on the dead? How many dead people we got? I mean, the lack of sensitivity to what he's dealing with and what's right in front of him, it's unbelievable.
Just to clarify, he did say he should be proud of the lower
dead. He should be proud of the fact you only got 16, 17 dead here, huh? How about a hand for the 16 or 17 dead?
Because Katrina, that was a real catastrophe.
That was the real. What are you people crying about? It's just unbelievable.
Hey, don't knock them. They wiped out the budget. Come on. They've thrown the American budget out of whack. Come on.
Did they really do it, or was it the hurricane?
It's just so outrageous. Oh, hey, Puerto Rico, thanks for screwing it up for the rest of us. You got to hear the mayor, the San Juan mayor. This is Carmen Yulín Cruz on MSNBC. Now, you may think tossing paper towels into the crowd, well, no big deal, right? We make a huge deal out of everything, no big deal. The people are underwater. They haven't had power. They haven't had electricity for a couple weeks. They don't know when their kids are going back to school. They can't get the basic staples of life. And they're standing in line for hours for everything, from gas to the basic things. So there's a shipment of paper towels. Paper towels. Just paper towels. Right?
Right.
Take for granted. Just basic. The only one that doesn't take paper towels for granted is Sandberg. Paper towels. And the president, I want you to visualize this, the president standing up in front of the room, if you haven't seen it, and he's tossing them out like footballs and basketballs.
And when they're catching him, going, there you go, good job. There you go.
Yeah. Like a concert T-shirt gun.
Exactly.
Here's the mayor about how that looked.
This was a PR 17-minute meeting. He was insulting to the people of Puerto Rico. There was no exchange with anybody, with none of the mayors. And in fact, this terrible and abominable view of him throwing paper towels and throwing provisions at people, it does not embody the spirit of the American nation. You know, that is not the land of the free and the home of the brave, that the beacon of democracy that people have learned to look up to.
It all comes back to the same thing. It's like a little kid and a mom having to go, this is not how we behave at something like this. But he's not a little kid. He's a 71-year-old. And he's president of the United States.
New York Times
today.
The New York Times headline this morning was Trump lobs praise and paper towels to Puerto Rico victims.
Colbert last night had this.
Trump addressed the devastation this hurricane caused to him.
I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack.
What? That's the budget is out of whack. That's like a fireman rescuing you from a burning building and then saying, you do understand what our water bill is going to be now, right? Do you have any idea how many sexy calendars we're going to have to sell just to pay for this?
Wow.
Trump even took time to meet with victims of the hurricane, although he could use some help with the small talk.
We have a good house.
In the meantime, here you are. Right?
Exactly.
We're going to help you out.
Thank you.
Have a good time.
Thank you.
Have a good time. You're a disaster site. You're not working the floor at your casino. You guys having fun here? Listen, I'm going to comp you half a gallon of drinking water. Enjoy your hurricane, everybody. Don't forget to tip your FEMA worker.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just unbelievable.
Did you see the video of him actually meeting the mayor? They tried to shake hands.
Well, but see, this is a really good point, Steve. I'm glad you brought this up. This is a really good point because here's Twitter tough guy, who goes on Twitter and blasts the mayor. This woman who is sleeping on a cot because her own home was destroyed.
Right.
Blasts the mayor over and over again. And Steve, what did she do or what did he do when he met her?
It reminded me of when my dog first met a cat. The cat went, like that.
Yeah.
That's how he coiled back from her. And literally it lasted like 2 seconds. He looked up into the sky and walked away.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Yeah. And walked away. Yeah.
And didn't she say, she made a comment to
him. She apologized.
Didn't she? She made the comment, though, saying this is about saving lives. This isn't about.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. This is about saving lives and not something else. And it was kind of muffled.
And he did it like a very good, very good. You know how you try and pull away from a handshake.
Again, a human being in that case would say, I'm sorry we had a miscommunication, or right. I apologize for whatever.
Right.
Or we should talk later. How about that? We should talk privately.
Yeah.
I'd like to get your thoughts on something.
Her post-interviews were interesting, too, because that's when she said he's really the miscommunicator-in-chief rather than commander-in-chief. She seems very well-spoken. I really like, hearing her.
Considering the hell she's gone through.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Final point here, and I think this is a very important one. This was brought up this morning somewhere, MSNBC, CNN. I'd give you credit if I knew exactly where I saw it. But made a great point. This should be the easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is the easy stuff. This is the gimme. This should be the president flies in. He hugs people. He tries to make them feel better, and he tells them we're going to be for them.
Right.
Be there for them. It doesn't turn into an incident because you're such a boob. You don't know how to handle it. Mm. Again, we're not making any of this up. This happened. This happened yesterday. 6:31. Much more to come on Vegas. Much more to come on the very important term the Supreme Court started on Monday with Karen Conti in just a few minutes. Let's do the big story next on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti is an attorney. Here's how this normally works. She's on Sunday nights with Noonan. And she's nice enough to be on with us most Wednesday mornings and explain the law to us. Andrea's thinking about selling her body for science, Karen, so we have a story we need to get to in regards to that, because there are some risks involved. And by the way, I'm an early bidder.
I have to die first, hold on.
But prior to that, we have to talk about gerrymandering. Again, gerrymandering is not a guy. Gerrymandering is a term, and when used in political election circles, means rewriting district boundaries so that you're almost certain to guarantee re-election of your party's candidate. And this is now in the Supreme Court.
It is, and it's not the first time, but this time there is a situation in Wisconsin where the Republicans apparently drew the districts that made it very, very beneficial to them. And that's what they always do. So it's not like this is a partisan thing one way or another. The Supreme Court has ruled in the past that you can't do that when it comes to race. So you can't gerrymander to disenfranchise a particular race. But it's never really ruled on whether or not they can do that in a way that it is political in nature. And if so, what is the Supreme Court going to do about it? They're not a legislature. So how are they going to rule? How are they going to come up with a test to say what's acceptable and what's not acceptable under our Constitution?
And what did they hear yesterday?
Well, they heard arguments, and there was a lively argument, and I think the liberal justices were very critical of the gerrymandering, saying that basically they seem to be saying that it disenfranchised people to the point where it violated their First Amendment. Their vote meant nothing because of the way the whole state was carved out. And the conservative justices were arguing, why do we get involved in this? Isn't this something that you should vote your politicians out of office, the ones who are doing this, and they're the ones who are in charge of making sure that the voting is done properly. So it's going to be a very evenly divided court on this decision, in my opinion.
The problem here, right, is opinion versus fact and whether or not this is constitutionally provided for or not. And I would love to see gerrymandering made illegal in some form. I don't know how you do it.
Well, I don't either. And we have a problem here in Illinois that's very similar. And there's been out, there have been allegations that our Democratic leadership has gerrymandered our states to keep power. So this, I think the whole country is going to be watching this very, very carefully to see what standards the Supreme Court might, just might, implement.
Karen, that was my question to you. So when was the standard created to assess how much partisan politics are involved in district remapping? I mean, obviously, that was a long time ago.
Well, in Illinois, you can do it every 10 years. Every 10 years, the party in power gets to redraw the map.
It's
and, of
crazy,
course, here,
though,
it's been Democrats forever. So every 10 years, they get to spell check their map and make sure the boundaries are just right. And again, I've said this before. If you take a look at the district maps of Illinois, it's like taking a piece of stained glass from church, dropping it on the ground, piecing it together in the shape of Illinois, because that's how erratic the districts are. Like your mom's district is like 48 feet wide and 47 miles long.
I have the same congressman and in Chicago as you know, the district is all the way down to southern Cook County, where it borders, butts up against Will.
Right.
First district.
And the whole point is to ensure that you
unusual.
Have
I mean, gerrymandering has been going on forever, everywhere. So this is nothing that's really unique to Illinois or Wisconsin. It's just a really interesting question of when does a court actually come in and say, you can do whatever you want, but you can't violate people's First Amendment rights. What does their vote mean? Where does that line get drawn? Is it going to be the very interesting question?
Well, here's the piece, though, that makes it really difficult. This is like the argument about whether or not I can get a job and I don't have enough experience. Why do I get experience if you won't give me the job? How do we change the way these maps are drawn if we can't win the elections to throw out the people that are drawing the maps?
Well, exactly. That's exactly right. I don't know the answer to that question.
And that's what Dennis Fitzsimons tried to do with the fair map thing. Dennis Fitzsimons used to run this company. He and a group of very influential Chicagoans and raised a ton of money to legally fight to redraw the map so that it would be fair to both parties. And may the best man or woman win.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Madigan and his cavalcade of attorneys got it shut down in court in Illinois. So I don't know what the Supreme Court could do, but I hope they find a route to do something.
I agree, but I think that the chances are very slim, just because the courts at this juncture, who's on the court, they don't like to get involved in anything they don't have to. They have a hands-off policy, and I think with Gorsuch now, and what's interesting is that last term, the court didn't really take a lot of really important cases because there were only eight. And if they took an important case and they were a tie, then that would affirm the lower court without really ruling on it. So they took all these really important cases this term, but they're still very, very evenly divided. And I could see a case that, you know, this one might go 5-4 one way or the other.
Yeah, and if you go back to the primary job of the Supreme Court every day to serve and protect the Constitution, constitutionally, states' rights matter.
Right.
And if states' rights are determined to states' elections, this is where it gets pretty dicey. But until somebody comes up and says, the way we get rid of the people who are already in office is to vote them out. Well, based on the way the districts are drawn, it's very difficult to do. Now, and again, I don't want any of this to make people more apathetic than they already are, because you've got to get involved. Mm-hmm. So we'll have it all figured out by the end of the show, Ken.
That's good.
And we'll come back and we'll sell Andrea's body to science in just a moment. Dave, would you like your body sold to science?
No, thanks.
Well, you're in pretty good shape. We could probably break you up and sell your parts.
Okay. Was a chop shop? No, I don't think so.
No, I'm just saying, Dave, we could probably get some good money.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, when do we die before you start selling us?
Well, I'm
our
not
body
keep
parts.
The money.
I mean, I'm an organ donor, but I'm not quite ready for...
Let me tell you something. Yeah. Science wants to examine both of your brains.
And do they have the right to reject you?
No.
Oh, no.
More Karen Conti in just a second. It is 6:53. Jason Aldean has canceled indefinitely his remaining shows on tour. Said there needs to be time to grieve. I respect that. Respect and understand that. By the way, including him and his band. They were witnesses to the horror as well. Unfortunately, they all got out of there okay. Let me know when Karen's ready to go. Okay. Karen Conti's back with us. All right, Karen, a simple question, I think, in legal terms here, because I think most times you as attorneys as a group want clients and potential clients to shut up. And yesterday, the brother of the shooter spoke to cameras again. And if there is a civil lawsuit, an expected civil lawsuit by the victims, collectively or separately, it would seem that even though the family of the murderer may not have millions and millions and millions, the people at the hotel do. And the more this guy talks, the more it could be used as evidence. So is he hurting his family, he himself, his 91-year-old mother, and all the others? Not that people are going to care, I suppose, so much, but I just thought it makes for an interesting legal question. Every time he talks, he might make it worse.
Well, how much could his estate be worth? You know, even if he amassed $1 million, that's not going to go very far in these lawsuits. So, you know, the family's not liable for relatives' wrongdoing. So I don't think it's really going to matter a whole lot. I think there will be lawsuits against the hotels. Clearly, there's going to be lawsuits that say that, you know, now we have different standards. We have to protect against random gun, gunmen. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. I don't know what the hotel could have done here differently.
Yeah, neither. Especially in Las Vegas, where there's open carry.
Right. And you bring in golf clubs, you know, golf bags, large bags. Why would you think anything differently?
You're on vacation. Mayor of Vegas made the point that we got show people coming in here bringing in wardrobes. And
right.
Said 10 suitcases is nothing.
Right.
So.
Right.
Which, Karen,
Which
kind of goes to the whole invasion of privacy. I mean, if there are lawsuits filed, and I'm sure there will be against the hotel, I don't see what they can win. But if there are, doesn't that go to invasion of privacy? You know, what's in the suitcase? They start looking around and, you know, hotel staffers start poking around. It just seems like a whole new can of worms.
Well, yeah, but, you know, a private hotel could conceivably check everybody's bags if they wanted to. I mean, the airlines can do it. Restaurants could do it if they wanted to. They could actually say, no concealed carry, and we're going to frisk you. No one would probably go into that restaurant very, very much. But yeah, they could do that. But is that going to be the standard for all of our hotels and motels across the country? I mean, when you have an act of random violence like this, people want to shift and change and be more careful. But how do you protect against some crazy person in doing what they did? I just don't see that this is a case of negligence. I don't see what the hotel could have done to prevent this.
Dave, during the break, has decided that he definitely wants to sell his body for science. And he's insisting on you being his agent, Karen.
Are you okay with that, Karen?
Well, you know, was it Rodney Dangerfield that said he wants to sell his body to science fiction?
Yes, yes, yes. Here's the story.
No offense, David.
Here's the story from the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. Jake, is my subscription to the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin current? I haven't seen it lately, but you've got that figured out for me?
Yep, just did it yesterday, actually.
Okay, good.
Weird you just brought it up.
A woman filed a lawsuit in Cook County Circuit Court last week against a former Rosemont Body Donation Center. I didn't know there were those. But claiming her son's remains were sold for profits instead of used for medical research. What do we know here?
Well, this isn't the first lawsuit against this company. Apparently, you know, they say that, you know, you call them, they come pick up the body, they donate it to science is what they say, and then give you the remains back in a little urn. And it doesn't cost any money, or my understanding is there's very little money involved. So a lot of people do this. And this company has been sued several times, and the allegation is they're not using it for science. They're using it they sell the body parts. I don't know who they sell it to. I don't know who's buying body parts. But this is a lawsuit that, you know, if it goes to trial, these cases have gotten, you know, over $100,000 and sometimes up to over, you know, $2 or $3 million. So, you know, basically you give your loved one's body and you want it to be treated with respect. And if it wasn't, you know, that's a lawsuit and that's fraud.
I, you know, it makes sense that these centers would exist, but I guess I didn't know that they did. And I would assume they'd have tremendous regulation, wouldn't they?
No, you would think that would be the case, and you think there would be a tracking of where these bodies go. Most of them say that what they give them to various medical schools so they can, you know, look at the cadavers and figure out, you know, what they're going to do in the future and for research for disease and that kind of thing. But you would think that would be a really clear line of tracking the bodies. But apparently, according to the allegations, they said one thing and did another.
I donated my knees to science because they needed bookends. They just wanted to take the two knees that are useless to me and make them bookends. Karen, when are you on again?
I'm on a Sunday night from 8 to 9 with Brian Noonan.
All right. And call you at the office at what number?
332-7800. That's 312. Or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Thank you for that.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I feel the earth.
Right, good enough to win you, Tony. Dave, you saw the Carole King musical, right?
I did.
Loved it?
Loved it.
Sang the tunes all the way home, annoyed your wife?
No, she was right there with me.
I know, but you annoyed your wife when you were singing.
No, she sang along. She doesn't mind my singing.
I loved it. It was awesome. We all sang.
Oh, I saw it too. It's awesome.
Well, she's awesome, and so is Jesse Mueller, who joins us, a graduate of Evanston Township High School. By the way, if I had a Tony, I would just strap it to my neck and wear it around like a necklace. Where's yours?
It's really, really heavy. I wouldn't recommend that. You'd have really bad neck problems.
Yeah.
Mine's on a shelf. I almost had a disaster one time because it's really heavy. You have to have a nice, sturdy shelf.
Yes, I would guess. Now, when you say really heavy, what, a couple of pounds?
Yeah, at least. I think it's more like 5 or 7. I don't know. I'm terrible at guessing that stuff.
All right, so the next time someone asks you this question, I want you to have previously gone to weigh your Tony.
I have to put it on the scale.
We need an exact number. Well, congratulations. I mean, that's unbelievable, and you deserved it because you were beyond fabulous. But tell everybody about your hometown and what you're doing and what we need to know.
Yeah, so I'm coming in not this weekend, but the next. I went to ETHS, Evanston Township High School. We called it ETHS because that's what the cool kids called it. Mm-hmm. And it has an amazing arts program, and it had and has this incredible student-directed, written, produced variety show called YAMO, which I don't think means anything in particular. I think it was based off of Northwestern's WAMU show, and it's incredible. It was one of my favorite and first theatrical experiences and memories that I had in high school, and the show is having its 60th anniversary, so we're having a celebration on Sunday, October 15th at 1:30 at the high school. And yeah, it's going to be really, really fun.
And how cool of you to come back and do this. But apparently, Andre, what I'm getting out of this too is apparently if you are North Side, you only speak in acronyms and initials.
Yeah, right.
It's YAMO, it's ETHS.
Early.
The cool kids, right?
You're taught that really early. Yeah, really early on the North Side.
I understand.
Jesse, I know this is like asking you to pick between your children, which I would never do, but I loved you in Carousel and your role as Carrie, loved you as Carole King. Do you have a favorite? I know, again, it's like picking a child, but was Carole King the role of the lifetime? Or?
I mean, I think in a lot of ways it was, which is fascinating because I didn't know it was out there. I think people often ask performers, like, do you have a dream role and what's your dream role? And now I get to say, I feel like I've gotten to do all these amazing new shows and take on these roles that I literally didn't know existed because they didn't exist yet. And it's such a gift. So in that way, I mean, Carol obviously is this musical phenomenon that we all know and love, but to take her on as a character was really a gift and a huge.
Yeah, I got a couple of nieces who love being on stage. A couple of nieces who love being on stage, and my son was a theater major. And you know, you have to love it. You have to love it. You have to think about it from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, and it has to be something that beats in your heart and nags you all day. Go do some more, that kind of thing. So, do you have advice for kiddos listening or parents of kiddos listening on what they ought to do?
Oh gosh, I mean, I think especially for parents listening, I think I'm so grateful that I had parents who understood it. They were in the business, so I had the opportunities, and I think I was just kind of, I was inclined to be kind of a weird kid, but I had these inclinations to things. Like, encourage your kids. If your kids are creative, let them find outlets and ways to be creative. That's so important. That's such a part of them forming who they are. And as much as parents can encourage that, I think it's such a great thing.
YAMO, the student review. And by the way, what are you going to be doing that night? Are you going to MC it, or what's your role?
I'm going to be singing all in acronyms.
Yeah, we're losing you on your phone.
I'm going to be doing songs. There's going to be tributes. There's going to be videos. It's just kind of a way to look back and the show has been in the history and the performers and the people that have come out of that show to do amazing things in the industry and beyond.
Well, I appreciate you being up for this, and I mean literally and figuratively, because for theater people, this is the middle of the night. Tickets for everything discussed here available at, well, except for the Carole King thing, you got to get those the normal way. Available ethstheater.com, ethstheater.com. We lost you a little bit on your phone. Did you talk into your Tony there briefly? Did you think that was your phone?
I dropped it.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Well, it's great talking to you. Congratulations on all your success.
Talk a riddle, yeah, come on. Get your black hawk tickets, yeah. Talk a riddle, yeah, come on. Get your black hawk tickets, yeah.
Let's hawk a riddle. We'll get you Blackhawks tickets for the Penguins and Hawks tomorrow night. And if you've ever had the great thrill of being at a Hawks season opener, there's always special surprises. There's always cool things that happen. And this is a very new-looking team. The average age of this team, we talked to Coach Q about this Monday on the show, is 14. They're very young. Mm-hmm. Very young.
It's not exactly.
Oh, it's not 14.
It's a few years older, but not much.
Just a math error.
Not much.
You'll recognize many of your favorites. You know, we got this guy named Taves. He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And this Kaner kid seems strong to me. You got your Crawford in goal, and you got a whole lot of new faces. A whole lot of new faces.
Yeah.
New faces on the bench. You know, behind the bench in the coach's situation.
Samuelson.
Yeah.
You know, it's
gonna be exciting.
It's a young. There are some exciting young players on this team that I think people are going to be fired up to see how they do.
And tomorrow night against the defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins, big cheaters.
I understand they're bringing the Stanley Cup with them and they're leaving it here.
They should.
Might as well.
You're going to save shipping.
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to put it on the Penguins plane. You're saving the NHL shipping costs.
They're coming anyway.
Big cheaters.
Put a nice white cloth over it. Get it ready for next May.
Next June.
We could save time and just have the championship parade this weekend. Oh, wait, I'm going to be out of time. Let's wait. That's right.
We were trying to coincide it with the 1,000th show. It just timing didn't work out.
Well, the Hawks want to wait and play the season. I go, why? What is the formality? But coming off the disaster in Nashville, these guys are as hungry as they've ever been, in my opinion. I've been around them a little bit. I think they're ready to rock.
I think so.
So we have to avoid injuries, Dave. That's why I'm encouraging all of the A-line best players on the team to skate only completely covered in Nerf, like a Nerf suit.
it doesn't really slow them down either.
No, they're that good.
Yes.
I'm going to give you the Hawker riddle now. The first person to correctly answer it gets these tickets for tomorrow night. 312-981-7200 is the number. Here we go. From Farragut High to Columbia CC to Vietnam Radio to Weather MC. But since the 80s, my fortune and fame... White turn letters and a roulette game. Chicago native.
Oh.
You think you got this one, don't you?
I don't know who this is. I don't.
First correct caller, starting with caller 7. From Farragut High to Columbia CC to Vietnam Radio to Weather MC. But since the 80s, my fortune and fame. White turn letters and a roulette game. Who are we talking about? I will give you this clue. It's a proper name of a person. Do you have enough?
So. I don't.
Okay.
No, if it's a landmark, I was pretty good with the Bean and the L. But
it's not the Bean.
I don't know
it's
who this is.
It's not the Bean. It's not the L.
No.
We will take these callers and come back and get you a winner in just a second. 720 WGN. First Hawker riddle for tickets for tomorrow night. From Farragut High to Columbia CC to Vietnam Radio to Weather MC. But since the 80s, my fortune and fame, white turned letters, a roulette game. Whom am I speaking of? Who am I talking about?
I think I don't know.
Okay. You think you don't know?
I think I do.
Let's go to Phil. Phil, do you have the answer?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
Pat Sajak.
Congratulations. Pat Sajak is the correct answer. You've won a pair of tickets for tomorrow night's fabulous season opener. And,
awesome.
And who are you going to bring to the game?
Probably my brother-in-law, I would think.
Really? You're that close to him, huh?
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a big Hawks fan, too, so why not?
Okay, but I'm telling you, Phil. Phil, what's your last name?
Regan, R-E-G-A-N.
All right, Phil Regan from Mount Prospect just won tickets to the opener tomorrow night. If you've ever known Phil in any capacity.
Hey, this isn't
Phil.
The former Cubs reliever, is it?
It is, actually. If you've ever known Phil in any capacity, today would be the day to track him down by social media or get his phone number and say, will you take me to the game
Phil,
tomorrow night?
How you doing?
Good. Not too bad. Actually, Arlie, Andrew, I know somebody knows you, too.
Oh, who's that?
You know what? Alex?
Oh, yeah, Alex.
Oh, Alex.
Oh, Alex, the Greek guy. Yeah, the Greek guy,
Alex. Of course.
All right, Phil, hold on.
Tell Alex I said hi.
Phil Regan was the vulture.
Phil, when that's he not nice.
No, that was his nickname when he pitched for the Cubs.
Hey, he's about to be my date for tomorrow night. Don't be dissing on Phil.
Yeah, and Phil, by the way, doesn't have time to talk to us. He's too busy taking calls and texts now from people who want to go to the game.
Yeah.
Who's your best friend, Phil? Coming up on 7:30, we need one more break before going right to the big story. All right, I just want to share with you a couple of texts as you tell me what the big story is.
Okay, big story is going to be Puerto Rico. Reaction today, and the president already tweeting about his successful visit yesterday.
Public seems to disagree. Here's a few texters. 847, tossing paper towels into a crowded room is not presidential. There's a few more words in there that I won't be saying. Let's see, 317, he's a complete moron and an embarrassment to this country. I appreciate the way you cover him. You keep me saying I love Chuck Todd as well. I'm trying to screen out the ones I can't say. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's some gerrymandering ones in here. 630, he was very dismissive of the San Juan mayor. Mayor Cruz, he said thank you and turned away immediately, seeming to dismiss her presence entirely after she said, it's all about saving lives, it's not about politics.
That's what her line was.
He never mentioned her when he was acknowledging different government officials for their hard work, a disgusting excuse for a human being. These are the listeners now. Mm-hmm. But then we have this. Steve Cochran is the biggest A-wipe on Chicago radio, and Rokon is the most annoying idiot I've ever heard. WTF is wrong with you, WGN. Well, that's a good question. We're going to look into that. Steve, I find it amazing how surprised everyone is when Trump acts like a boob. When has he ever not acted like a boob? Leopards don't change their spots. 630, I really feel like Donald Trump has high-functioning Asperger's. I've seen it many times. 630, Jimmy Kimmel said it best last night. He puts the ass in compassion.
Oh, there you go.
847, the mayor's well-spoken. He can't have a sense of humor. Turned into an incident because of you liberals. Yeah, they caught me again, didn't they?
Look at you.
Oh, boy, caught me again with the whole liberal thing. Where is your respect? Well, again, I respect the office. To respect the person in the office, has to earn that respect from everyone. You don't get it automatically because you're the president of the United States. And when you act the way he has acted, and when you do the things he's done, you don't get my respect. You don't get a lot of people's respect, obviously.
Now, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack.
The texter continues, he can't win. I agree he probably makes mistakes, but he's human, aren't you? He's there. He's trying. We're going to need more than that. We're going to need more than he's trying. We're going to need him to up his game a little bit. And 6-3, I'm really irritated with the president said about Puerto Rico. My family is there. They have no water, electricity. They're having trouble getting food. Incredibly insensitive. My aunt spent hours cleaning dirty water filled with cockroaches in her house. And she lives in a nice neighborhood. My uncle's in a poor neighborhood, and we've not been able to contact him. Thank you for speaking your mind, stating the truth. That's Ruth from Aurora. Some of you texters this morning on the big story, which is coming up next on 720 WGN. You probably don't know this, but whenever Marianne Ahern walks into a room, she insists at this place, including in her own home. Did you know that?
It's a ringtone.
It's 7:42. Next Tuesday night, I will have the pleasure of talking to our friend Marianne Ahern, Rick Pearson, Mike Flannery, Craig Wall, all part of the media forum at the Lincoln Forum. Finally, a sensible way to talk about public policy without putting people to sleep. And good morning, Marianne.
Good morning.
So is it that tune in particular that has to play when you walk in the room?
It's way better than, "Hey, Mom, what's for dinner?"
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to Tuesday. We'll tell you I can get tickets in a second for this. But we have some political questions for you, first off. There seems to be some rumors building that the governor may not run. You buying into this at all?
Oh, yesterday we spoke to him, and his answer, I called his campaign gal very quickly. I said, "What is going on? Why? Well, he almost sounded as if he was going to run as an independent, because his answer was, "Well, it's not about Democrats. It's not about Republicans. No. Yeah. He's going to run. I don't know why, as if he's going to build up this big mystery or let's have a groundswell of support, because he's having a pretty difficult few months. But he's going to run. It just was an odd answer to the question.
Yeah, and Marion, you've covered these for years and years and years. But Chris Kennedy on the Democratic side, Chris, it's such a field of different male candidates. I guess my question is, when are we going to see some of the females start running, either for governor or any bigger office, mayor?
Right. Well, you often have Bridget Gaynor on, mm-hmm. and often call her the mayor, so I wonder about that. And then we have this new attorney general race that we didn't see coming, and Sharon Fairley is officially resigned as of today from COPA to begin her, perhaps, AG campaign. She has Friends of Farley has been filed as a political committee. She's out asking for support. She is going to see whether or not this is for her, but often when we have someone on the ticket like Elisa Madigan, a woman who's had that position, there are many who say, okay, who's going to step up, and does it have to be a woman to replace her?
Were you surprised by Elisa Madigan's decision? Because we had her on the day before, Marianne, and she was talking about reforms and things she wanted to get done, and then the next day, ironically, and you probably got this too, we got Mike Madigan's announcement before we found out about Lisa Madigan, with Mike Madigan saying, "I'm so proud of my daughter, what she's done." We all looked at each other and thought,
what a surprise that Mike would take the spotlight away from his daughter. That's a shocker.
Yeah, and then 2 seconds later, her tweet pops up.
It was crazy. That day I was over in Gary. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, was in town. And I saw this tweet as well from one of the reporters. I literally called the reporter and said, "Wait a minute, I think I'm misreading something." And he said, no, this is true. I said, "Wow." And we were like, "Betsy, it's nice to see you. We got to go." And we ran out of there so fast to get back to the city.
Is there any consensus among the people you've spoken to about why now, why she decided not to run?
No, and she has refused interviews so far. I mean, some are wondering, is this all a grand scheme, and then perhaps she'll run for the U.S. Senate at some point. I don't see that, though. I think there's a lot of talk of that she would love to be appointed a judge. I don't know how. She's so risk-averse. I don't see her out there really scrambling, trying to be in a big, difficult race. And she's got kids that are heading to high school that I would think, she went to Latin. Might she want them to do the same? That's expensive. And then perhaps soon college after that. So perhaps, I guess she's out there, wants to make money while she can. She's very young. She could run again in 5-10 years.
Yeah. And your kids, as we all know, at least those of us who are, over 30, know your kids are home for about 10 minutes. And the older they get, the less they're home. So you want to have a little bit of that time, too. So, look, if she wants, she deserves to take whatever time she needs.
Absolutely. It is a little bit that, we should have seen it coming. She didn't show up at the Democratic breakfast down in Springfield. She didn't show up at the slate making. So for those who might have also been interested and would have had a little more time to think about it, should I do this or should I not, it's really made them scramble to hurry up and decide.
But you don't think she's out of politics forever, Marianne? I mean, would you see her perhaps running for governor or mayor down the road?
Well, first of all, she's not going to run for governor until the speaker's gone. But
right.
So in other words, in 100 years.
who's to say? She's a tough one to figure out. But, you never say never, but I don't see it right away. I don't.
How are things at NBC5?
They're good. You know what? Can you imagine? 28 years. I mean, who would have thought? I 10 of those, I was able to work out of 3 days a week while all those kids were young. So I totally understand where Lisa Madigan's coming from. I went to my boss and was like, help.
Right.
I love this job, but I don't want someone else raising my kids.
Right.
So, but we already said, Marianne, you can't ever leave. You and Carol have such a good thing going over there. You can't ever leave.
Salmon Louise.
There you go.
But I got to tell you, Marianne, and I hope you know what a big fan I am, but Marianne Aaron has done tremendous work.
Yep.
And somehow been able to keep a smile on her face, which I think because there's a little insanity there. And covering one of the most challenging, but I would also guess one of the most interesting political beats in the country, because there's nothing like Chicago or Illinois politics.
Wow. First we thought when we covered the Obama presidential race, you know, a guy from our town, that was crazy wild to be a part of that, you know, and every time you turn around, it's just, there's something else going on. And that's what really, as if I didn't have ADD before, I definitely have it now because I've got the attention span that lasts about a minute 30 that my story runs tonight, you know.
A lot of people don't realize how close you get to other people who are, in quotes, competitors on the road. And next Tuesday night, literally, we're going to put them close in chairs. Mike Flannery, Marianne Ahern, Rick Pearson, our friend Rick Pearson. I think I mentioned Rick. If I didn't, I apologize, because, of course, there's no better political writer in the country than Rick. And Craig Wall, right? Craig Wall, I believe, as well.
Right. We all play well in the sandbox. You know, it's great.
And the cool thing about this,
we are competitive.
The cool thing about this Lincoln Forum idea is you get people in the room who are interested, as it says on the website, for thinkers and doers in Illinois. If Trump has taught us anything, he's taught us that more people need to be involved to save the country. My words, not yours. And we're going to talk about the media. We're going to talk about things the media could do better, but certainly talk about this fake news nonsense, talk about the challenges that are out there, and talk about how the media has been elevated to a level it hasn't been to before. And are we up to the challenge for that in times where there's less money to support the cause? So I think it'll be fun, and we'll have some laughs
too. I think so, too. I'm looking forward to it. LincolnForum.org, correct?
That is exactly right. LincolnForum.org. Look at you plugging. Nicely done. At the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel on October 10th. Now, I've not been in there since the redo, but Andre, you said it's fabulous.
Oh, it's fantastic. Cherry Circle Room is in there, Shake Shack, and Cindy's, too, the rooftop
patio. My wedding reception was there many years ago, so I'll have to have a toast to that.
Absolutely.
The Lincoln Forum and monthly events with others still to come. They just did the first one with Sheriff Tom Dart. This is the second and many more to come, as I said. But get a sense of what the media does every day and get up close with them, because it's kind of an intimate room. Get your tickets while you can. They're, what are they, $33 or something? I don't know how they came up with that number. $33, LincolnForum.org. I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much, guys.
See ya. Thanks.
See you, Marianne.
It's Marianne Ahern.
She's the best.
She is great.
So good.
She's great. If Mike Wallace had smiled while he was asking the hard questions the way Marianne is able to do, he'd probably still be working. That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
All right, look, it's 8. It's 7. Carry the 2. It's 7:50. That's right. It's 7:50. We'll get to traffic here, and then we'll continue with the program. Dean Richards will be on today, and I think he's on tomorrow. And then he is going into hiding in the Greek islands, where he's been laundering money.
That's right.
For about a week or so.
I don't think laundering.
Today and tomorrow.
He's probably celebrating with a little ouzo.
Well, whatever you people call it. Yeah. All right, 7:51. Before Mary does this, I have something on my mind.
And that is?
I thought maybe we were going to play the thing. We're not going to play the thing. I thought you were telling me to play the thing. We're having an on-air meeting now. I thought you wanted me to play. All right, there may be something coming up you need to hear, because whenever Abigail Grace speaks for me and tells you to call in to win, you could be a big winner. I'm going to try not to get into your head, Mike. I'm just going to try to just move forward.
Go Pops!
Go Pops!
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Steve Rotogen, I am reeling with the notion of 1,000 shows. That means 1,000 shows filled with creativity and curiosity, more than any man or woman should have. Congratulations, pal.
What's cooler than Rick Hogan talking about you, right?
In that voice? Yeah.
You know, Rick Hogan is actually followed by a cloud of smoke and a jazz quartet. They just follow him everywhere he goes.
Hard to book a flight with that.
Kind of is, yeah. Couple of plugs. We're celebrating the 1,000 show week all week long by giving you stuff. You go to WGN Radio's Facebook page and throw up any comment there, and we will enter you for a chance to win. Every day this week at 7:35, we'll also be tweeting out a chance to win. All you need to do is favorite that tweet or retweet it, and you're in the running to win that prize. Keep listening for that special sound like you may have just heard with Abigail. And thank you for all our partners and for Abigail, who doesn't even know she's working for the show because she's only 21 months old.
But already has agents coming to her now because I guess she's getting a lot of requests to be booked on other TV shows and talk shows in Chicago.
And already has a lawsuit pending against me.
Yeah.
Well, yes, you should. For your vicious attack. How many 21-month-olds have you knocked down allegedly accidentally this week?
That's the only one.
Did I tell you I did the total as well? And I always forget. I bring this up and then I forget. But I believe at last count, I am 677 months old.
Ah, okay.
She's 21 months old. I'm 677.
So when she turns two, you'll stop saying months, right? You'll go, she's
for
two.
For her.
Two and a half.
But I'm going to keep counting mine.
For yours? Good.
Also, there's a little piece of Sandberg as a loon in here as well. And our friends at App thought, okay, Sandberg just and Pat, her husband, they just bought a new washer dryer here. Yes. She's crazy for the washer dryers.
Well, she took a day off, right, to welcome it.
She took a day off to welcome the washer dryer appliances into her home. Her second washer dryer. She's got laundry rooms.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if she takes in. She's like the neighborhood washwoman. She takes in other people's laundry. So my friend Steve Shapiro said, well, what about this? And I said, that's a great idea. We're going to give away a Sandberg's a Little Loony washer and dryer to a lucky WGN listener.
Now, did you call it that? Shapiro didn't call it that.
No.
The Sandberg's a Little Loony kind? Okay, got it.
This is Appliance Palooza. I don't know if we'll continue it, but I know we're going to do it right now. An LG washer dryer to a lucky listener. You go to WGNradio.com/contest and enter for your chance to win. That's WGNradio.com/contest. Are we literally just taking those entries there? So it's a random winner?
Yes.
So it's not like they're going to bring their laundry over to your house and you'll judge their laundry?
No, but I'm happy to do that after they win.
Okay, all right, fine. So you're going to put them through a clinic? You're going to teach them how to use their stuff? Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm pretty sure I know how to do it better than anyone else.
That's fantastic. Good call by you. Congratulations to Peggy from Rockford. Peggy won a $25 McDonald's Arch card and a $75 gift card to Greek Islands goes to Sharon from Mokena.
No, I'm sorry.
Sorry, take that back.
And she can actually have both.
No. I'll take her to Greek Islands. How about that? Yeah, that. We'll go to dinner.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Let's go live with Dean from Channel 9. Good morning, Dean, from Channel 9.
Good morning, Steve, from WGN Radio 720.
When are you leaving for Greece?
Well, it's a cruise, Italy, Croatia, and Greece.
So you're flying to Croatia.
I'm flying to Venice.
And then you're bicycling to Croatia.
And then I'm going to take a gondola.
A gondola. A gondola.
Doesn't that sound like a disease?
It does sound like a disease.
Doctor, I have a little gondola.
Yeah, here's a salve.
I think I've got
Is it a gondola or a gondola?
I think it, I don't know.
I got yelled at for saying it wrong once. Sorry to interrupt you, Dean.
By a gondola guy?
No, we were in Italy taking a picture by a gondola in Venice, and my friend said, go move a little closer to the boat. And he came over and he went, it's not a boat, it's a gondola. Rude American.
Oh, really? They called you rude American?
They called, well, not me, her.
Ugly American.
She called it a boat.
Yeah. Yeah. The guys, just so you don't get in trouble next time you go over, the guys in the Where's Waldo outfits, they like to be called Waldo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to make that mistake guys. Again.
The gondola guys. So you're going there. You're going to Venice. Then where are you going?
Then we go to Dubrovnik.
Yeah, me too. And what after Dubrovnik?
And then we go to Bari, Italy.
That's not a real town.
Then we go to Mykonos. And, I think Mykonos.
Mykonos.
I believe Mykonos is next. Yeah. Yeah. And Santorini.
Oh, I love Santorini.
Katakalon.
See, now you're just making stuff up.
Which is the where the Olympics originated.
Isn't Katakalon what you wear when you're over there, the Katakalon?
It's a very nice fragrance.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a great time.
And then you're Athens.
My Athens or your Athens?
Athens.
Athens.
Yeah, you're Athens, Greece.
Sounds like a great trip.
I can't wait to see their new flaming cheese statue that they put up.
Yeah, which is fabulous. Every hour on the hour, cheese catches fire at the top of the statue.
Right between the Acropolis and Parthenon. It's a giant statue that lights up. Like Old Faithful. It's like Old Faithful.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, there's no denying that. All right, we got a lot to get to. Jason Aldean's story, Jennifer Lopez's story, Bob Seger's story, Hugh Hefner's story. Kate Winslet is back together with James Cameron, kind of. What's it like to shoot a movie in the snow? And Dean's pre-movie reviews, even before it's time.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh.
All right, back to Dean at Channel 9.
Steve,
Jason, I'm sorry?
I have the mystery solved of the correct pronunciation, gondola or gondola.
Oh, what is it?
When it's a boat, a vessel on water, it's...
gondola.
Can you hear that?
Gondola.
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 When it's a rail car, mm-hmm. it's gondola.
What about gondola. When it's... What about when it's a sandwich at Avanti's in Bloomington?
That would probably be gondola.
Oh, that would probably
I'm guessing, because it would be a vessel of delicious imported Italian meat. Meats.
Yeah. And again, for those of you traveling to Venice, as Dean will be in just a couple of days, the guys in the funny suits on the boat, they'd love to be called Waldo. Mm. Call them Waldo.
Hey, Waldo.
Yeah.
Americano stupido.
Rude American.
Hey, Dean, we want to congratulate Mimi from Park Ridge.
I love her.
She just won. Well, we all do. She just won golf at Cantini Park. You can call 630-668-8463 for tee times. Mimi in Park Ridge. You can call Mimi, too, if you want, if you have her number.
Sweet.
What's Jason Aldean up to?
Jason Aldean, who was, of course, on stage at the Country Music Festival in Las Vegas on Sunday night when the gunman opened fire, has decided to cancel his performances. For a while, he doesn't think it's right to go back on stage just yet. He issued a statement yesterday saying, out of respect for the victims and their families and fans, that he has decided to cancel shows that he had scheduled in Los Angeles and San Diego. So he hasn't really said when he'll go back on stage yet, but he doesn't think it's the right thing to do. He's probably not quite ready to go back on stage yet either.
I would guess.
I got to think that would be pretty traumatic when you're the guy on stage when something so horrific happens.
Yeah, unspeakably bad.
And J-Lo actually has done the same thing. She doesn't also think it's right to go ahead and do shows in Vegas right now. She had shows lined up at the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino, and she has canceled this weekend's performances for herself as well.
Bob Seger is canceling for a different reason.
He is. He had a tour that would take him pretty much to the end of the year. And yesterday, under doctor's orders, he canceled the tour because of what's being called an urgent medical issue concerning his vertebrae. Didn't say exactly what that meant, but he did cancel a show in Ohio last week because of severe back pain. It's obviously related to that. He says he hopes to be back out on the road soon. They are going to reschedule the shows at some point. So if you're holding tickets for the Allstate Arena show, November 17th, which is among those canceled, you can either hold on to your tickets and they will be honored for that, the new dates, or you can get a refund when you go back to your point of purchase on that.
The Hugh Hefner cause of death is out. This sort of surprised me. A guy at 91, you would think, natural causes, right?
Well, I mean, I guess, when you're 91, that cardiac arrest and respiratory failure doesn't seem that unusual. But there was a blood infection and an antibiotic-resistant E. coli. That's the part that really seemed unusual.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
About all of that. And that, how they say, you shouldn't take antibiotics unless... It's, vitally, vitally, vitally necessary because you build up a resistance. And then when you really need it, they don't work. That's sounds like what's happened here, that he had E. coli and the antibiotics that they were giving him were not working as a result of that. He died last week, of course. He was buried Saturday right next to Marilyn Monroe in the mausoleum at the that LA famous LA cemetery where so many celebs are buried. Also, they announced yesterday that Jared Leto will be playing Hugh Hefner in an upcoming biopic that will be directed by Brett Ratner. So that's an interesting development.
All right, and you'll let us know when that's out, but that's not a review.
That's going to be, no, well, not, definitely not a review. It's not going to be for a couple of years anyways.
Kate Winslet, James Cameron, backstory. They broke up in quotes and literally when?
Well, they broke up when they finished filming the Titanic together.
Mm-hmm.
He directed Titanic, which for a long time was the top grossing film of all time. That was 20 years ago, believe it or not. James Cameron went on to make Avatar, which now is the top-grossing film of all time. And Kate Winslet has signed up to be part of that project. So she's going to be in the sequel. It's not going to be out till 2020. We have quite a bit of time between now and then to anticipate and look forward to Kate Winslet being all blue.
Were there ever... Were there ever problems with the two of them, or no. Was that just made up?
No, I don't think there. I don't think there were. This is just the first time that they've worked together since Titanic.
We've talked about this before. I don't understand why Avatar was huge. I'd never watched the movie completely. I couldn't get into it, and yet it made buckets of money. And now they're filming like four at one time.
Four
or something?
Sequels. Yeah, they're making four sequels at one time. The first of those sequels will be in the year 2020, and then there's like one a year, after that. I loved Avatar.
Oh, you did.
I do. I'm not big on those kinds of movies, but this was the really rare case where 3D was unbelievable in this movie. It was completely stunning. So I think that part. Is part of the attraction of why the huge box office numbers. Don't pretend like you don't like seeing, actors and actresses running around half naked with their bodies painted blue.
How many times
have I walked in on you in a
conference
room?
I like a naked blue lady as much as the next guy.
I get nothing for that.
I don't even know what that means.
That is the phrase that pays today.
Kate Winslet and Idris Elba, Frufen Gajan, Farfik Nugan. Did they really make their movie in the snow? That wasn't special effects?
No. They have a new movie that's opening on Friday called The Mountain Between Us. They're a couple of strangers at an airport. It's snowing like crazy. They have got to get home, so they hire a little private plane, to get them there. The plane, this isn't too much of a spoiler, I don't think, because it's in the trailer and all the TV commercials. The small plane crashes in the frigid, freezing mountains, and they are, they're tested. Their survival skills are tested with this, whether or not they can stay alive. They could have easily done this with special effects. They do this on a soundstage. But the director wanted to be real and wanted it.
They wanted him to be miserable.
They wanted that. Who doesn't want their talent? Steve, how many managements have you worked for who wanted the performers to be miserable?
All of them.
Not all of them.
No, that's not true. The current group, not at all. But the rest did. The rest did. You can look it up.
So they were actually in sub-freezing temperatures, actually in blizzard-like conditions. And I talked with Kate and Idris, as I like to call them, to make it sound like I'm really close personal friends with them, about making this movie in these horrible conditions.
And what did they say?
I can't think of too many movies where the actors endured what were clearly, I'm sure there were stunt things that went on and some movie magic, but this could not have been an easy shoot for both of you, was it?
It wasn't. It was a real test, and we knew it going in because Hani, our director, was very, clear, like, this was not going to be a green screen movie, I want to find the truth.
You know what? I couldn't wait to get up there. I mean, that's really the truth, and I think we haven't said that today. I could not wait to get up there. I was so excited.
Love the challenge.
Love the cold. We're actors. We are so blessed that we get to wake up in the middle of the night. We go to work. We do this wonderful job that is so much fun.
I could have done without the cold bit. I'll just be honest.
Yeah, I think there's some honesty there from Idris, and Kate went full actress on you there.
Yeah. Oh, I love. Yeah. I can't wait to get out and get into the cold. There's a scene in this movie where she falls through, like a lake that has, you know, was supposedly frozen over, and she gets to a thin spot and falls through the ice into the water. Actually happened.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
Yeah. So she says she loves it.
We are so privileged to fall into the water.
Yeah. Big liar. And I love when I get a British interview,
because
yeah, they're always so prim and proper. When they drop the F-bomb, I sort of like that.
It does sound so much better in their accents.
It does. Swear words sound better when the English do it.
Is she delightful in person, generally speaking?
She is so delightful.
She asked about me?
And so down to earth. I'm sorry to say she did not.
Well, it's a shock.
I think she's trying to move on, Steve. I think it was too painful.
Probably true.
A little too painful.
And since I'll be out Friday, Dean will be out Friday, why don't you do a movie review for us before you leave
town?
Well,
I can also give you a little bit tomorrow if you want. But
sure.
The Blade Runner 2049 is coming out on Friday. Did you see or like the original Blade Runner?
No and no.
I saw it and loved it.
You are such a sci-fi chick.
I know. Well, I took a movie class in college, and this was one of the movies we had to watch.
Oh, it was homework. Oh.
It was really good.
It was homework. I liked it. I didn't love it. There are people who are fanatic. It's like so fanatic about the original Blade Runner movie. I'm not one of those. I will say that this new Blade Runner 2049 is spectacular looking. It's one of the most impressive looking movies that I've seen in years and years and years and years. I will give it that much. It's beautiful. But I think it's cluttered also. I think there's a lot going on there, and thank goodness if you saw the original movie, because you were going to be so completely lost if you did not. It's one of those movies where it's fairly mandatory that you would have had to seen the original to fully appreciate the new one that's going to be coming out, and that is one of my movie pet peeves of all time. Movie should stand on its own. You shouldn't have
right.
to read
You can make
a book
all the
first.
Sequels you want, but you should never have to have seen the others.
Yeah. You shouldn't have to do homework before you see a movie. You shouldn't have to see other, the previous films in the franchise. Movie should stand on its own. And like I always say, if there's no story, there's no movie. And I think that's where this movie falls short. That said, movie geeks all over the country are, they're foaming at the mouth to see this. So, I mean, some people are super, super fanatic, and, they can probably recite the dialogue of the original movie along with Harrison Ford, who is very good in this new movie also. Harrison Ford's back, along with Ryan Gosling, a good cast. The chemistry between those two are really good, but, man, I think the story falls short in this spectacular-looking epic.
Is there any scene in the movie, before I let you go here, where Harrison Ford looks really scared and isn't sure what he's going to do?
I'm trying to think if there's a scene in the movie where that's not happening.
The face I'm talking about? The Harrison Ford face under?
Yeah.
Let me do the Harrison Ford face for you right here. This is the Harrison Ford face in the majority of scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It goes something like this.
Right. Wait, open your mouth just a little bit more. There you go.
And then, of course, he saves the day.
And here's what's going on when Harrison makes that face that Steve just did. Here's what's going on in Harrison's head. Oh, damn it, I forgot my lines again.
I'll just make
this face and it'll
Someone
look like...
Someone throw me a bone.
Yeah, it'll look like I know that this was intentional.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
That's Dean Richards, Big Story Next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, man, Bickle put Sammy Vatanen right down to the ice on his back with a massive hit. Bickle looking for two for his money. He got it. A thunderous body check in the near corner on Vatanen. Oh, and then Bickle steps into Byfuglien from behind and knocks him down, and Byfuglien takes exception to it. Sharp over the wild line left wing to Bickle, coming by Moose, and shoots and scores! Brian Bickle!
Bickle to Shaw, left corner to Keith. To the line, Rundblad tees it up, fire save, and rebound score! Brian Bickle!
Feels like 10 minutes ago. Well, it kind of was. We are very pleased to have in studio our friend Brian Bickle, Bix, and I'll let him introduce his pops here in a second. First off, you look great. Do you feel as good as you look?
Yeah, I feel great. I just got a freshen up haircut from my local barber in
in Chicago, but
now you actually go to a guy for a haircut? Because I picture you like with scissors in the bathroom.
No, yeah, I'm not one of those guys yet.
But, no.
Yeah, I have a guy. Yeah,
you got a guy.
I gotta keep this hair looking good for, you know, when I come to see you.
Ah, so. You're as handsome as
it
ever.
Looks good.
Yeah.
How are the kiddos?
The kids are great. Yeah, they're a handful of times. You know, 3-1, but you know, it's nice to have everybody down here and, you know, spend time down here this week.
It could be a special night.
Yeah, it is.
So you and the Hawks have come to a decision that, and it makes total sense to us because regardless of how many teams you played for, the greatest moments for us as Hawk fans was watching you perform. Watch you perform at the highest level, score the biggest goal, one of the biggest goals in Hawks history, in that 17 seconds mess. Mm-hmm. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
But you were the playoff guy. You were the go-to playoff guy. So what? Tell everybody what you're going to do.
Yeah, you know, I'm signing a one-day contract. You know, Chicago is, you know, my home away from home. I, you know, started here 9 years ago and, you know, finished off my career in Carolina. But now to get the opportunity to come back here and say to retire as a Hawk, you know, it's an honor. It's, you know, something that I wanted to do is to be, you know, that family, and I feel like that I'm a part of it, and you know, the Hawks should give me the opportunity to do that tomorrow, and it should be a good night.
It's really manning up too, as far as I'm concerned. There's never any question about how tough you are, but the fact is nobody expected your career to end at this point for the reason it's ending with this MS situation you're dealing with. So I thought you've handled all of this brilliantly, and I think this is such a great move for the Hawks. It's kind of goosebump stuff for all of us to be able to see you do this, and to have your family here has got to make it more special. It's pretty emotional.
It is. You know, you didn't want it to write it that way, but you can look back the memories of, you know, what the city and what the Hawks gave me. And, you know, both my kids were here and got born here. Just all the memories that, you know, the good ones that you think about, you know, you're going to have forever. And we're just happy to, you know, finish it off here.
Say hi, Dave.
Brian, how are you feeling?
I feel great. I feel great. I'm actually kind of tired lately. The kids are with all the travel, but, you know, get a good nap in today to get ready for tomorrow would be, it's exciting.
The power of a good nap, man. The naps
are
best.
It's overrated. You know, it's underrated, actually. It's underrated. Yeah, naps are something I did for, you know, 82 games a year. Now I don't get the nap. Now I'm looking for the nap.
We've seen this done. Some teams have, athletes have done this where they've signed one day with their original team to go back and retire as a member of that team. When did this idea come up between you and the Blackhawks?
I think right away, you know, probably, you know, weeks after I announced that my last game in Philly would be, you know, my last game. You know, they jumped on, you know, on board, and they wanted to, you know, for what I've done here when I played, you know, 4 years in the minors and then played, you know, the next five up in the NHL, they wanted me to be part of that family. And, you know, it is. You know, I always thought Chicago was a second home, and, you know, what they've done for me and my family. And, you know, I'm just honored to be here.
You've always embraced Chicago. We were talking during the break. Is it just so great to be here? I mean, you actually go to the restaurants and the bars, the establishments in the city. Maybe
they were at Chicago Cut last night, tearing up a couple of steaks.
Exactly. But you really embrace the city. So we thank you for that.
I enjoy the city. You know, coming from a town of, you know, 800 and coming to the big city like this is, you know, overwhelming. But, you know, it's a home away from home. We have a lot of friends, and, you know, we made history here, and, you know, we'll never take that back. And I know when I come back here, I'm welcomed. And, you know, I think, you know,
well, you're always going to be a part of the family, and you're always going to be able to proudly wear the Indian head sweater because
exactly.
You're a Blackhawk for life, man.
Yep. That's,
that's a pretty good fraternity.
It is a good fraternity, and I'm happy to be part of it.
You had much of a chance to look at this team this year?
I have, yeah.
I mentioned earlier the average age of this team is 14.
It's actually kind of funny. It's my first hockey pool that I joined because obviously playing, you don't really get in hockey pools, but now I'm in a hockey pool. And,
like, you know, fantasy? Yeah,
like fantasy with my friends. Yeah. So there's only 12 of us. It's just all for, you know, for laughs and
gambling.
It's going to be embarrassing
if you lose, but, dude. It's going to be embarrassing if you lose.
Right. But, you know, get picked some of the guys that, you know, played with, and it's kind of funny to do that, and I'm sure you're going to have fun with it.
Have you drafted yet?
Yeah, we did draft.
Okay,
yeah.
Who have you got from the Blackhawks?
What are you looking for? Help in yours?
No, I just this is great.
I have a couple. I picked Darling, Exoc. I picked Crawford for my two goalies. I didn't get a chance to pick any. The Kane, Taves, and all those kind of guys, they were gone.
Yeah, they take all those guys. Have you talked to the guys since they came back? Guys like Sharpie and Sauter?
Yeah, I talked to them. I saw them last time I was here.
Yeah,
at the convention.
The funny thing about Saad was, Saad, and you and I laughed about this years ago, but when Saad came up, he wouldn't look in the eye. Mm. He was so nervous. You talk about being overwhelmed by the big city, but this is a Pittsburgh kid, right? And he was very polite, but he wouldn't look in the eye. He shows up at convention this year. He's raising the roof.
Yeah,
David Arnett in the convention. I don't know what happened to him in Columbus, but he's got confidence.
Yeah, and that's good. The Hawks need it, and I know they're going to lean on him big time this year. With missing Haas, with the two-way game he brings, Saad's going to be a big part of what they're going to do this year.
It's going to be interesting with Saad picking up a lot of that to see what Taves can do production-wise, because it's going to open him up for stuff.
Yep.
Why don't you introduce the old guy sitting next to you here in a second.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Brian Bickle, shooter number one. What a moment here. In on Stolarz. He scores! Brian Bickle puts Carolina up by one, and they want to empty the bench.
What a goal! The sound just told the entire story. No need for analysis. Just listen to that thing go off the pipe and in. And Amanda Bickle and the Bickle family, the Hurricanes. Oh, boy, what joy.
Last goal of a great career. What are you going to do? You going to teach? You going to coach? You going to any idea?
Nothing yet. I'm just going to be dad.
You love kids.
Yeah.
I could see you coaching.
Yeah, I think, getting some
Those little suckers in their skates and
get them all lined
there, straighten them out.
Make sure they don't
send them off to junior. Say, don't forget to send Bix a check. That whole thing.
No, I think I might get in with the kids. Maybe do a hockey school or something like
that. You're such a good guy. You ought to work with kids.
Yeah.
Plus, you're kind of childish. it's our friend Brian Bickle. He signs a one-day contract with the Hawks to retire as a Hawk, part of the festivities to kick off the season. And all your family's in town. Introduce your dad.
Yeah, that's my dad, Bill. Bill Bickle. He's the guy that got me on the ice, really. From day one, traveled me around to the rinks to, let me live my dream. And, he's here today.
He's pretty special.
He's got a funny shirt on. I know he's proud of that.
right. Yeah, it's all about the playoff mustache.
I've only got a couple times where I shaved his mustache off, and I'm like, you need to grow it back because you don't even look the same. So.
Well, Bill, it's good to see you. And I got to give Brammeier credit because you were like one of Brammeier's finds. And when Bix had that first playoff run here after you came over to the Hawks, which would have been with 10, I guess, right? Brammeier was putting you on about every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was quite an honor. It is just to follow him along. And again, like I said earlier, Chicago is the place to be. It really is. It's amazing.
Bix just brought up, your son just brought up, well, you know him, just brought up a point, which I think is important for people to remember for the tiny, 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 tiny fraction of a percentage of kids that grow up and make it to the NHL, the 99.9% of parents who make the commitment to get up early and get to the ice and take your kids to those games, that's a big deal as a parent, isn't it, Bill?
Yeah, it really is. And I think the factor of it all is to just try to be nice all the time and don't try to take yourself away from the game, what really is, and let him play his game and always just be nice.
It's emotional for a family. I know when he probably first called you and told you I have this, that's tough as a dad no matter what your kid's doing.
Well, when he called me, it didn't really sink in. I talked to him for about 5 minutes and I hung up. Then I'm sitting there thinking, I called him right back and we talked for quite a while after that.
But yeah.
It was a shock to hear it. Really was.
And by the way, a long phone call with Brian is about 7 minutes.
If that, right?
Yeah. But the great news is you got great doctors. You look as good as you've ever looked, and there's no reason not to believe that you've got great management on your health situation.
Yeah. To catch it early, obviously we had the tip-top places to look at everything. The treatments have been going well. There's a lot of people in this world that are affected by it and they live on. You never know. And I'm part of one of those right now and just enjoying my family and things like that.
And raising money for help, too, which is exactly, an important thing when you're famous. We're saying hi to the folks at CLTV who've joined us for the 9 o'clock hour as well. Brian Bickle's here. Bill Bickle's here. Dave Ennett's here.
I just want to ask Bill what those dad trips were like. with the Blackhawks? Because it just looked like you guys were always having a ton of fun.
What happened in those places stayed with those places.
Oh, I get that. Oh, I understand that. But were you having as much
it's
fun
dad
as
code.
I tell you, there was one chap that really made me laugh a lot, and it was Andrew Shaw's dad, Dougie. And I tell you, we were friends now. We talk probably once or twice a month, and he's not that far from us, but that friendship will last forever.
That's great. Can you imagine that Andy Shaw's dad might be fun?
Definitely is.
Yeah. I have to ask you, I find myself now quoting my mom, who is I'm very close to, like you're very close to your dad, too. What are you saying now that you think, oh, my gosh, I sound just like my dad, or the best piece of advice
he ever gave? That's a great question.
He's got some one-liners that they get a little carried away. I remember he was on like a big, he would call people like nicknames by just like seeing you, like he would call you Scooter or Shooter or like things like that. And sometimes I say it, and my wife's like, "Don't say that. That's not, you don't say that." Dad's
By the way, Bill, is this now a good time to admit that's when you can't remember the guy's name?
Exactly.
Hey, Shooter, how you doing? Yeah.
Right. So you're doing that too.
Done it a couple times to caught myself. But it's kind of funny.
All right, now this is the impossible question to ask. From the time you saw him as a little kid to now, favorite moment watching your kid play hockey?
I think, guys, that goal.
Yeah, the 17
seconds.
And I was out of my seat, and 17 seconds is Davey Bolin's. Wow. Like, unbelievable.
Do you remember the specifics of that goal?
I know
it happened so fast. All right, take me through.
I know everything. I can still play by play. I remember,
It was a kick out, wasn't it? Weren't you just, the right place to be?
Well, Kane was dangling down the ice. He took a shot on that. Then I was playing with Taves and Kane, and then I saw Hanzus beside me. I'm like, what? It's a couple minutes left. And like, okay, we pulled our goalie. So then I'm like, I did a hot lap, and I went back in front of the net, and it just worked out that Taves fed it through Charles' legs, and I didn't really look. I just kind of hit as hard as I can, and went 5-0, and I'm sure you guys remember the celebration where
yeah, a little bit.
My eyes were bulging out of my head. But then my dad, you see the camera on my dad, and 17 seconds later, the camera was still on my dad, and they're still celebrating, so it was a memory for forever.
Right, because the Bolin goal isn't going to matter until the Bickle goal goes in. Yep. And is that just instinct from all those years of hockey, see puck, hit puck?
Yeah, hit puck as hard as you can. And then, I didn't have the best. I thought I had a pretty good shot, but in that situation, it was hard because Char is so big.
Who was in goal for the Bruins?
Tukarask.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing he doesn't have a twitch. You would think 17 seconds, he would never be the same again.
Yeah, that's a tough one, I'm sure.
So, congratulations, man.
Yeah.
You've been a good friend to the show and to me, and pulling for you, whatever you end up doing. But, you've always got a place here, too.
Thanks. I'm always happy to be on.
Yeah. And, Bill, great to see you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Us dads got to stay together. Bill's got a heavy equipment business. I'm going to slip my resume. Things don't work out
good
here.
Idea.
Get a little cabin in the woods outside of Orono. Actually, cabin in Orono might be downtown.
No problem. Yeah, it is.
But congrats on a great family, and you're a great dad. I've loved hearing you with Johnny B and Dave back in the day, talking about how much fun you're having with your kid. And the fact that you're hanging out with Andrew Shaw concerns everybody with the NHL, or Andrew Shaw's dad, I should say. But anyway, thanks. Have fun tomorrow.
Thanks.
Good to see you, bud.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:16, we continue. Show number 1002, live in the Showcase Studio. Thanks to Allstate, as always. We also continue giving away stuff, prizes all week. 1,000 show, and your Abigail Grace tell you to call in to win. She'd be the 21-month-old that you'll hear.
You better do it. You better listen to her.
Yeah. 7th caller, 312-981-7200 would be a big winner. Can happen at any time. The world's clearly gone nuts. It's an ever-present pressure and a feeling that we all have. And we asked our friend Kelly Kittley to come in to talk to us. Kelly, how's the book, by the way?
Oh, it's great. Thanks. I've got a TED Talk coming up in a couple of weeks about the book.
Excellent.
Breaking the Stigma of Mental Health.
And the book is best found by the title or by your name?
By the title, Myself.
Okay. And get it wherever books are sold.
Amazon.
And get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought so.
Pass it off to a friend.
And how's your family?
Great. Everybody's thriving. We've got four in school. And
how old are the kids?
11, 9, 7, and 5.
Yeah. How about that? And trying to solve the rest of the world's problems. Fully established last time, last couple times you were on. You had a very interesting upbringing in a very interesting time in your life that turned into inspiration to help others.
Yeah, absolutely. Grew up above my parents' tavern in Lincoln Park. That was my first experience with clinical training as a social worker.
I'm guessing, right? There's part of me that thinks, because I grew up around professional drinkers, there's part of me that thinks the best place for a therapist's office would be in a bar.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I was bartending, I was doing therapy, but people came back the next day and didn't remember what they talked about. So so I thought, I think I can make a profession out of this, but we can actually build and heal
in my
office.
Well, here's the thing that I think people really are getting hammered by now. Not just what do I say to my kids? What do I say to myself? What do I say to my head? There's no way to make sense of a lunatic opening fire on 20,000 people and killing almost 60 and injuring over 500. There's no way to make sense of the natural disasters we're having. There's no way to make sense of my words, not yours or anybody else's, the goofball we have in the White House currently and the problems that he's causing. What do we do?
Gosh, that's a great question. I mean, we're so oversaturated with the negativity. And I think, you know, I know better. Don't sit in front of the TV and watch 12 hours of news and listen to radio. But
well, you should always listen to radio, even if it's detrimental.
Just not for 12 hours.
Even if it's damaging to you, you shouldn't know. No, but you're right. You got to get away from it, don't you?
You got to get away from it. And, you know, I found myself just wanting to find answers. Why? How? What do we do to prevent it? How do I have a conversation with my kids? And, you know, now it's the aftermath of people feel anxious and depressed and are living in fear. When's the next one going to happen and what are we going to do about it? And I think it's so big and it's so all-consuming that we've got to start with what's right in front of us. And a lot of times that's with our family and being able to have conversations with our kids and being able to process it with our friends, with our coworkers. You know, it's almost like nobody wants to make eye contact or talk about it because, you know, it's all over the place. But we need to talk about it and we need to feel connected in our communities.
How do you start by addressing it, especially with younger kids who know that something has happened, who know something bad has happened? How do you gently address it? I mean, they're going to go to school and probably hear about it, or maybe from even kids on the playground. So how do you start introducing this to kids?
Well, you know, it was interesting because Monday morning I hadn't, you know, I work from home on Mondays and my son is on Twitter. He's 11. And he said, did you hear about what happened in Las Vegas? And I was like, no, I didn't. He said, this crazy guy just shot fire on everybody and killed all these people. And I was like, oh my gosh. So we had a dialogue about it and I wanted to know what he had heard and what his concerns were. And then I was concerned about the other kids because I know they hadn't heard about it. And I waited. And when they got home from school, I was like, so was anybody talking about anything? And what were you guys doing on the playground? And they were pretty oblivious. But I did open conversation about it because I wanted them to hear it from me first.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what parents and grandparents need to hear, right? Because you can't just hope they're not going to hear about it or not talk about it. You know, give them the advice from the people they respect the most about it, so when they go to school, whatever they hear can be appropriately filtered, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, they have a hard time processing it as much as adults do.
As they should.
Absolutely. And, you know, age appropriately, I think sometimes they get the information and then they don't want to talk about it, but it's going to come up. It's going to continuously keep coming up. And it's going to, you know, my kids were falling apart the other night and I had to believe like, gosh, the universe is just so toxic right now with our, well, I won't get all political on you, but there's just an overall negative energy. Well,
but that's a good question too. How do you talk to, I guess, each other? You know, you have a different political view than me. Everybody's worried about offending each other nowadays. Yeah. And even with your kids. I know, you know, my god kids, they had the mock election, you know, so they're going to be talking about politics.
Yeah. And they want to know what Trump's going to do about it. And, you know, my gut instinct was to like lock the doors and bring everybody in bed with me and put our covers over our head. I did that for a few minutes, but then I knew I had to show up, you know, and
it's just an excuse to cuddle with your kids.
It's heart-wrenching.
Is there a role that needs to be played, you know, by the older kids for the younger kids? And if so, or do the older kids come to you? Like, your kid's 11. I wouldn't think the 11-year-old. But if you got a 15, 16-year-old in the house and younger kids, can they help?
Oh, I think so. I think having empathy for siblings, as well as making sure that they're not giving them too much information. You know, I have two boys and two girls, and I know the boys are more interested in, like, what did he use and how did he do it? Yeah. And, you know, more of the, like, masculine kind of piece of, like, holding guns and shooting guns. Mm-hmm. And they play that out. And I think anytime an older kid sees a younger kid doing that, you know, certainly my son has put my other son, and they're 4 years apart, in check. Like, let's not talk about that. Yeah.
There's a tough question overrides all of this, and what time is it? It's time. My nieces are at school. I'm not talking about the behind their back or in front of them here, but one of my nieces has an anxiety issue, you know, in general. My daughter struggled with anxiety at different times. Kids have anxiety. They have anxiety about, you know, simple things and big things. And what I want to talk about when we come back is it okay to tell them it's going to be okay? Because I don't know that it's okay to say you're never going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. That might not be right. So anyway, we'll come back. More with Kelly in a second. If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do it?
They can go straight to my website, Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, Kitley, K-I-T-L-E-Y.com.
And more in a second, 924 and WGN. $75 gift card to Greek Islands, America's most popular Greek restaurant with locations in Chicago's Greektown and Lombard. Kim from Lake in the Hills is a winner. Kelly Kitley's here, and Kelly talks to folks about their issues all day long, because everybody should. We were talking off the air, and I agree with Kelly. She believes, and I second this, it ought to be mandatory that we all get at least a year of therapy.
We'd be less judgmental and more compassionate.
Be a happier world.
Absolutely.
And I don't care about how much material I'd lose. All right, so here's the big question.
Yeah.
Can you sit down with your kids, and should you, and tell them it's going to be okay? And there's something about it which feels wrong.
Why?
Well, because I feel like your job as a parent is to prepare your kids and not give them some unrealistic view of something beyond its beginning. Like, you're always going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you need to tell kids there's very little chance anything bad will ever happen to our family. Look where we live. Look how we live our lives. But as you get older, you're going to be going places. You're going to be doing things, mm-hmm. and we'll help you prepare for that.
Sure.
Is that the reasonable approach, or am I missing something?
Well, I think we absolutely need to reassure our children that they are going to be safe, and our job is to keep them safe.
Right.
And, you know, we don't have any control of that once they leave our home.
But when they're little kids, why not say that, right?
Right. Reassure them that they're going to be safe.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Because kids worry about school, too, don't they?
Oh, yeah. And why is the school door locked? And why do you need to buzz in? And, you know, they're already feeling a sense of, I mean, I think that provides security for them. But I think also it brings up a discussion about awareness, you know, that even depending on the age of the kids, we're also teaching our kids, you know, stranger danger and to be aware of your surroundings. And, you know, certainly as my 11-year-old's like, biking around Oak Park with his Pokemon Go, you know, phone out, it's like, well, pay attention. Somebody could come up to you and pull that away. Or, you know, I think we need to educate them about awareness and what to do in different situations, but not oversaturate them with information and help them feel safe.
What do you think, just your professional opinion, because I don't want to get people angry, when kids should get a cell phone and be allowed to be on social media?
I say 12.
Okay. Because I know they want them younger.
Pretty reasonable number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know kids at 6, 7, 8 are going, oh, can I have the phone? Can
yeah.
I have this phone?
Well, and my younger kids ask, right. You know, how come Connor has a phone and we don't? But he's the oldest.
Sure.
And a lot of it is safety reasons and to be able to communicate with us. But certainly monitoring that social media. You know, I mean, he was looking through his thread on Twitter and that popped up about what happened in Vegas. And he had questions.
Yeah, and you got to be prepared to dive in, even if you feel like you're technically illiterate, get literate in whatever way you need to so you can monitor what your kids are doing and help them figure it out, too.
Get
last
literate.
Thing,
yeah.
Don't project your fears on your kids.
You're so good.
Well, I'll do what I can. You know, I've got a lot of issues.
You know, anxious parents can project a lot of anxiety onto their kids, and we need to be mindful of that
right.
and not overprotecting and not hovering and not, you know, letting them see the anxiety or having them feel that anxiety. I think it's okay to say, yeah, me too. I'm scared too. But not creating anxiety that's not already there, you know, because some kids are naturally wired anxiously because of their genetic.
And you could amp it up more.
Oh, absolutely. Completely. So we need to keep that in check. We either need to talk to our spouse about it. We need to seek professional help if we're feeling anxious and panicky, and just work through it.
You got a great thing that you tell people, which I love. It's if you feel off track for really any reason for more than a couple of weeks, it's time to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm. If you notice that this is continuing to go on and interrupt your daily life and you're perseverating, you know, thinking over and over again about thoughts or limiting your interactions with the world, we know that people get better the sooner they seek treatment. And so it may just be having an opportunity for 3 or 4 or 5 sessions with a Sure. professional, or there may be something, you know, deeper that's going on there.
The best way to find a therapist, this is a difficult thing for a lot of people. You can ask your GP for recommendations. You can certainly ask friends who mm-hmm. they see. But mm-hmm. do you have a way you recommend people find somebody?
I think the best way, at least in my experience, has been somebody. Yeah. But usually word of
just
mouth
to be
is
safe,
great.
Just to be safe, every fourth word eclipse. But no, to fit the sentence, I'm not upset with you.
So being able to find somebody who has had success working with a therapist, because right. I think a lot of times, you know, people are so intimidated and it's just such an overwhelming process. Ask somebody who is open about seeing a therapist. Ask somebody you trust, a doctor.
And if you sit down with somebody and you don't feel there's a connection, then you got to go to somebody else.
Yeah, don't write off therapy. It may just not be a good fit.
Yeah, because that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
It is a serendipitous psychotherapy, but the best way to find you again is how?
On my website, www.kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, Kitley, KITLEY.com.
You want to give a phone number out?
They can find my phone number on there.
Yeah, just find
and
it on
my
the
email
website?
Address.
Yeah. Okay. That's the easiest way.
And you can purchase my book on my website, too.
Get 2 copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. Title of the book is what again?
Myself.
Myself. It's a crazy, interesting story. It really is. 9:34. Ned Colletti's coming up, Dave.
Just saw Ned.
Yeah. Ned. Oh, did you go say hi?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. good. Ned Colletti will join us in studio for a second, talking about his book, The Big Chair. Great to see you.
Good to see you,
too. 9:34. Big story next, 720 WGN. Well, this is a treat. Ned Colletti coming back to the home office. For years, Cubs front office. And then he makes this baseball trip that you really can't make. You go to the Giants. You can't go to the Dodgers. You get to the Dodgers, you earn everybody's trust at the Dodgers, and you run the Dodgers at a time where the people that owned the place were nuts, and you made it work. Great to see you.
Great to be back. Great to be back in Chicago. Great to be back in this building. This building holds a lot of memories for me.
I'll bet it does. And a lot of contentious meetings that gave you a headache.
Once in a while, but more good than bad.
I'm sure there was. The Big Chair is the book. Ned Colletti. Let me hold it up so you guys on CLTV can see it. Get out. Get 2 copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. Get 9 copies. Give some for the holidays. Why now? Why write the book now?
Well, the book is a kind of a 35-year journey, actually a little bit more than that. I mean, I grew up here. I lived near Addison Street in Narragansett, grew up in a garage, ended up going from there to Franklin Park, East Leiden High School.
Moving on up.
Northern Illinois University.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then started this baseball career, luckily with my hometown team in 1982. Dallas Green was my first boss. And as you said, Giants after that, Dodgers after that. And I just decided it was time to put some of the things in my head after 35 years down on paper. I didn't necessarily intend to sell it as a book. I just wanted to get some things off my chest and out of my mind, so to speak. A lot of Sandberg stuff in there, a lot of Andre Dawson when he first came to the Cubs, that negotiation, and also Greg Maddux when Greg Maddux left for Atlanta. Yep.
There's no better storytellers than guys who are career baseball guys. Lou Piniella is a pal of mine. And the stories that he can tell about Billy and all those guys from the old days. And you collect stories. It's a pace of the game thing. It's a length of the season thing. It's a relationship thing. And you've got so many great ones in here. But let me start with current day stuff. Let me go in reverse order. Your Dodgers, who I know you still advise, Are they as good as they look? And what happened in August and September there for a couple weeks?
Well, I think the season is so long. It is hard to maintain the pace that they were on. Few teams win 91 games and have enough season left to lose 20 out of 25 and still have another 10 games.
Sure.
They were on such a record pace for such a long time. I think they took their foot off the gas for a minute, which is kind of normal. And when they went back to get it, it wasn't quite there till lately. They played a lot better the last 10 days. How good are they? We're going to find out. I think the National League this year was really down in pitching. I think your teams like the Cubs, like the Dodgers, like Washington, and the other two teams out west, Arizona, Colorado, they took it to the teams that couldn't pitch, and pretty much anybody else couldn't pitch.
Well, and Scherzer going down for the Nats is great news for the Cubs. And the Cubs, of course, never really created any distance till the end. Cubs seemed like they were playing with the division, and then finally they went, get out of the way.
Yeah. You know, I think not knowing what they really went through last winter, I think after going 108 years and the way the city celebrated, and not just a physical toll, but the emotional toll it takes on a front office and a baseball team, it wasn't a surprise to me that they were a little sluggish getting out of the gate. I mean, that's more normal than it is abnormal. But the last couple months, they've been pretty good. They'll be right back in it.
So much great stuff in this book, Dave, and jump in here anywhere. But I want to go backwards. The Frank McCourt and Mrs. McCourt years. It's hard enough to run a baseball team and create a winner when the two people that own the team are getting divorced and fighting really loudly, and you got to go to them for money and decisions and all that. How did you make the playoffs? How did you continue to put up a winner over 500 year after year?
You know, it was a great lesson in life. It was a lesson in the things that you can affect in a positive way. That's where you spend your time. The other stuff we couldn't do nothing about. We couldn't do anything about divorce. We couldn't do anything about bankruptcy. So I would get with our managers, first Joe Torre, then Don Mattingly, and say, hey, look, we're going to have noise all around us. Players are going to have noise all around them. I'd meet with them, too. I said, look, concentrate on what you do. How do you make a living? How do you spend your time? What's your passion? Focus on that. The rest of the stuff, you got to let go.
But as positive,
and they did.
As positive a guy as you are and can be, it had to be a huge pain in the butt.
It was a...
Well, you don't know when to walk in the office.
Well, you know, there was so much room in the office because everybody had left almost. But, you know, it was a different period of time. But, you know what? Life is full of lessons. And I wouldn't, you know, would I have liked to have it been different? Sure, but we can all like different things that didn't happen. It was a profound experience for me.
You talk about Mattingly in the book, and there's a great chunk in here about how you hired Joe Torre, which I thought was like stealing. That was unbelievable, regardless of what you paid for him at the time. But Mattingly, tough kid from Indiana, goes through the Steinbrenner stuff with the Yankees, struggles as a manager, gets through it, and then gets into a bad spot in a post game with you in the room. Starts complaining about the fact that he didn't get an extension. Is that the closest you've ever come to choking anybody?
No, but it's the closest I've ever come to, you know, talking right back. And if had I responded the way he responded, it'd been on YouTube for 1,000 years, you know. But I just had to keep my cool because I knew where his frustration point was. He and I had talked about it many times. Did I expect him to say it in front of everybody?
Yeah, that was weak.
Not necessarily.
It was weak, and it wasn't a Mattingly move to me.
No, I mean, Donnie's one of the best people I've met in the game. One of the hardest working guys I know. And you're right, he's from Evansville, Indiana, you know, and he was not a high pick. He was picked in the 20s. Elway and Marino were picked ahead of him in that draft.
Yeah, how about that?
And he's in Monument Park, New York City, in the Bronx. So guys had a great career. I love working with Donnie. He worked hard at it.
I was going to say maybe the closest Ned came to choking anybody might have been Larry Himes, because you tell that story when you were fired by the Cubs, the team you grew up rooting for, and you were never really given a reason, right?
No. And, you know, that day, that morning started here in this building because I stopped in to see Don Granesco, who was still housing this building. And I said, Don, you know, is this coming down the pike? Because I had this bad feeling. And he goes, you're kidding me. And he calls Mark McGuire, one of the vice presidents at the Cubs, and he gets on the phone. I can only hear Don's part of the conversation. But Don's like, I could tell by the look on his face, it was coming down the pike. So I drove over to Wrigley, and I sat with Larry for 20 minutes, and a bit of an uncomfortable conversation, I might say. You know, really didn't even know where I was from. Didn't know I was from Chicago. But anyway, all things ended up in a good spot, and we ended up actually having some good conversations down the road. A few years later, but a few good conversations
and,
down the road.
We got to talk Cubs here, but let's take a break. Let's take a break, come back, and then more with Ned Coletti in a second. The book, Get your copy, kids. Big Chair. I'd like a book report. The Big Chair is out. I'd like a book report. Send it to me, and we'll send it to Ned for proofreading and punctuation errors. After this on 720 WGN. Talking to one of Chicago's finest, Ned Coletti. Moved out of the garage, ended up in L.A., baby. But not before stops in Chicago, San Francisco, and on the way to L.A., and he loves being home again, even on a rainy day. Dave.
Well, Ned, you were with the Cubs when they had their first taste of success since 1969, the unbelievable 1984 season. What was that whole experience like? Because it's such an awakening for this city, and as much of a celebration as last winter was here, that 84 year was unbelievable.
It had a lot of magic to it. Dallas Green, it was his third year here as a GM, and when he came in, as you remember, he rustled a lot of feathers. He came in building a new tradition, you know, tear down Wrigley Field or putting lights in or, you know, all sorts of different things. But he started to build an organization and change the culture. He changed the culture from one that was kind of lackadaisical and kind of whatever happened, happened, to really you had to be there. You had to be engaged in this thing from beginning of the day to the end of the day. Made some good trades early in that season. Got Bobby Dernier and Gary Matthews from Philadelphia. Then he got Eckersley for Billy Buckner in May. Then he got Sutcliffe in June, which turned out to be a great deal. Ended up being 16-1, winning a Cy Young Award. But the year had momentum to it and kept having this magic ride to it, including the first two games of the postseason in Chicago. And then we got to San Diego, and it started to turn a little bit. And San Diego was kind of laid back, and before Game 3, I'll never forget, before Game 3, Gary Templeton and some Padres are starting to run in the outfield, like from the right field line where their dugout was first base
side. Spring training move.
Yeah, just kind of running to center field and back, and they brought towels out with them. And they started waving the towels. And suddenly, it was Jack Murphy Stadium, I think, back then. Mm-hmm. Came alive, and I thought, uh-oh, this is not going to be that easy. We got our hands full.
Right.
And we lost that game, and then Saturday night we lost when Lee Smith, Steve Garvey, who I do some TV with now in L.A., 4-for-4 walk-off home run off of Lee Smith. And then the next game we had a 3-to-nothing lead, and I had a bad feel, even with a 3-to-nothing lead. Maybe it was all those years growing up watching GN or listening to Jack.
Yeah, make you a Cub fan for life, right?
You know? But I had a bad feel because the innings were going so fast. Our offense was so fast. 6 at-bats, 10 at-bats, 12 at-bats. We were on the field too much. And then we gave up 2 runs in the 6th, and I saw Sutcliffe in the 7th kind of bend down to tie one shoe, looking into the dugout like, I'm done. And then when nobody came out, he went and he tied the other shoe. And I said, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
I saw Steve Garvey at Chicago Gourmet about a week ago, and he introduced himself, and I looked up kind of, you know, I always was a big fan, even after the
Well, girl of the
incident.
80s, you probably wanted to marry
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
Get in line. He
but,
got married a
but
lot.
But he looked at me. I said, Steve Garvey, he said, I am welcome back in the city. It's okay. I am allowed. But we were talking about Franklin Park off the air and some of the places that I used to go to in your hometown, one being Alan Joe's, best Italian sub, I think, you know, ever in this area. And that's where you made your first trade.
It was, I started going there when they opened in 1960. Two great things happened there. One is I met Ron Santo there as I was a little kid, and Ron Santo came in to buy some prosciutto, and they would call me.
Of course he did.
There were no cell phones, you know, 100 years ago. So the guys would call me because Ronnie would call from the clubhouse and say, I'm going to stop by on my way home. And so we'd stop by, buy some prosciutto, and they would call me and say, Ronnie's coming in. So I ride my bike over there. I was 9, 10 years old, and I got to meet him, and then I got to work with him when he came to the Cubs, and I was still working there. But it's also where I made my first deal.
What was your first deal?
My first deal was an empty Pepsi bottle for a pretzel. Because you got a penny for the deposit, and the pretzel cost you a penny. So a penny. So I would trade. I would go in there. My dad drank a lot of Pepsi. I would, you know, take one out of the little carton, go in there and get a pretzel. A little easier than making a deal for Manny Ramirez.
But there also, there
like
was prosciutto to be named later.
Prosciutto named later.
You got every major name you worked with through all the years and some great stories in this book. I could talk to you forever, man. And you're always welcome here.
Thank you.
Not just in Chicago, but in the building and on the show. The Big Chair.
The Big Chair. Thank you so much for having me on. Great to be back.
Appreciate you being on. And make sure you sign Andrea's book. It was mine until she grabbed it.
I don't.
It's 10 o'clock. Bill and Wendy are next.